You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The winter meetings have begun just outside of Washington, D.C., and we're going to take a look to see what some of these teams need to be doing, including the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm Allison Footer, and I'm here with Steve Gilbert. Steve, needless to say, the Arizona Diamondbacks have a little bit of work to do if they want to get back to being a contender in their division. Thanksgiving Eve, I guess, was a very interesting night for you. A big trade. Let's just go over that and see how that kind of set the foundation for moving forward.
Sure. Yeah, you're talking about the five-player deal with the Mariners where they got Taijuan Walker, Ketel Marte, in exchange for Jean Segura, Mitch Haniger, and Zach Curtis. It came as a little bit of a surprise just timing-wise, I think, for everybody. Jean Segura is a player, had a great year for them last year, but I think they felt like maybe they were selling high on Jean and that maybe he had kind of reached his peak. He was also set to make a little bit more money. And Taijuan Walker fits kind of what they're looking for, and that is they're trying to get some more young, controllable pitching with a high upside. They really feel like he's a guy that can now reach his potential, and they're excited about that. And they got an infielder in Marte that's can play second, can play short. He's even played a little outfield. It gives him, again, more athleticism and versatility.
So Taijuan Walker, like you say, he has a huge upside, and the Mariners were really so high on him for so long. But it's a matter of, I guess, staying healthy. And when you can acquire a quality young starting pitcher like that, there's a reason why you're able to acquire him also, because there are question marks. So that's what he seems to be pretty confident that he's going to go into next season healthy.
Yeah, you know, he had 10 bone spurs, he said, in his foot removed right after the season. Apparently he had an extra bone, he said, in his foot, and it had broken, and so there were all these little bits floating around, and one of them particularly was rubbing up against his Achilles, which I guess made it difficult for him to push off the mound. So he feels like he's healthy and can take that next step, you know, and I think that's what the Diamondbacks are kind of banking on, and that's sometimes the way you're able to get a guy with that kind of potential, is if he's coming off, you know, maybe what isn't what some people are expected of him.
I know that Diamondbacks fans just want a winner, so it's not like they're going to kind of lose their minds, I guess, over trades. But Jean Segura being a popular player, there is no such thing as a good trade where one side of the fan base is not upset. I mean, if both sides feel like, ooh, that kind of hurt a little bit, it usually is a trade that makes sense. But what were you hearing from Diamondbacks fans after this particular deal?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, Jean Segura had over 200 hits last year, so he was one of the bright spots in an otherwise kind of disappointing year for them. So I think that there was some fan reaction like, oh, we got rid of our, you know, best hitter, or whatever, or one of our best hitters. But I think for them, they felt like they only had, you know, two more years left to control. It was getting more expensive. They were going to bet on the upside here of Walker and save a little money also in the process, plus get an infielder that they liked. I think the wild card in the whole deal for me is Mitch Haniger. If he can take that next step, he's a little maybe older than some prospects. You know, people always look at ages, but he, you know, he adjusted his mechanics at the plate and had a really big year for AAA. And he's an outstanding defender in center field. So he could be somebody that if he turns into something, it really is a good thing for the Mariners. We'll have to see. But I think the Diamondbacks took a shot at a guy that they feel has a great arm.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk about, if nothing else. So now let's look at some of the other areas where the Diamondbacks need to kind of shore up the roster, and that would be the bullpen. Who doesn't need bullpen help, right? But the Diamondbacks really need to look closely at that.
Yeah, they do. The bullpen struggled last year. They lost two veteran back end guys when they traded Brad Ziegler and Tyler Clippard before the deadline. And they also, Daniel Hudson's a free agent who I know he had a really bad like month and a half stretch, but before that and after that he pitched really well. So they lost him as well from the pen. So they really don't have a lot of experience down there. They've got some young arms that they like, but that's definitely a spot where they need to add. And I think that's one of the reasons why they non-tendered, let's say, a Wellington Castillo, because that way they can save some money and maybe invest that some of that savings in the bullpen. But the bullpen market, as you mentioned, everyone's looking for bullpen help right now, and it could be a situation where that doesn't shake out until Chapman signs, until Kenley Jansen signs, and you know those guys come off the board. Then maybe we see, because the Diamondbacks aren't going to be bidding for those guys. So they're looking for that next tier or whatever, either via free agency or trade. And I don't think those guys are going to settle out until the top guys go.
It's an interesting phenomenon because the postseason tends to skew the thinking a little bit. You cannot get through a regular season with only a good bullpen. You have to have a strong rotation. In the postseason, you actually really need to rely more on your bullpen. And as we saw with the Cleveland Indians, you know, starting pitching was something that was a nice little luxury to have, but not really that necessary. I'm being a little facetious there. But really, the price for a lot of these relievers is escalating big time. Not just for, I think that once we see the elite closers go, I think we're going to see a lot of money go elsewhere too. And that's kind of been a trend. Do you think that's a good thing for baseball to sort of be moving in that direction?
You know, I think whether it is or not, it seems to be the direction it's moving, and I think that the good teams are going to be ahead of that trend. And maybe the Diamondbacks, if they can't find bullpen help, maybe they turn one of the young starters into a multi-inning reliever. No one can do what Andrew Miller did during the playoffs over 162 games.
Right.
But you can find guys that can get a couple of innings here every few, you know, twice a week, three times a week, whatever it might be. A guy like Braden Shipley, maybe he's a guy that they could move to the bullpen. Some of their other younger pitchers that have some upside, maybe they experiment with them in the bullpen. I think you can find bullpen arms. It's amazing sometimes where guys come from. Sometimes you have closers that are well known, a Chapman, a Jansen, but others come from opportunity. Opportunity opens itself up, and they take advantage of it. So I it'd be interesting to see how that shakes out for them.
So now let's talk about some guys that might be able to be traded. One that we're going to talk about that he's actually not going to be traded, but Zach Greinke. So his name is going to come up just because, obviously where the Diamondbacks are and the money that he's making, and he kind of had a little bit of a down year. I'm actually giving all the reasons why he's not going to be traded. But it's one of those things where if they wanted to absorb a lot of the contract, this contract was just signed. It's amazing. A year ago, we were like, oh, my God, the Diamondbacks, they're relevant. They're going to be competitive. And then from opening day on, it really just didn't work out for them. But where do you see it going with him?
You know, I think they'll listen. I think all the reasons you just laid out. He didn't have a great year last year. He's got a big contract. I think teams are still kind of figuring out what the CBA means for them in terms of having a guy on the roster that makes $31 million a year, which is what he makes. So he's got a limited no-trade clause. I mean, there's all kinds of different things that factor into that. Now, maybe if he comes back and has a big first half of the season and they're not in contention and they're looking around the trade deadline and some teams are desperate for pitching help, maybe then you see something. But at least it's fun to talk about now during the winter meetings. This is the time for that, Allison. Quit taking away the fun that we're having here. Zach Greinke could get traded. Come on, let's start something. No, but it certainly it is weird a year later to be talking about all of a sudden – well, maybe they can't afford this contract. Maybe they should get rid of him. They're not contenders. When last year we were talking about how this contract would be manageable, this made them contenders. And so things change pretty quick.
I really liked the rotation, as you know. I mean, through our conversations over the past year, I've always liked the Diamondbacks rotation. I felt like there was, at some point, it was really going to sort of come together. It really hasn't happened. I mean, how do you look at it right now? I mean, do you think that they need to be concentrating on the rotation as well?
Well, you know, I felt the same way. I mean, going into the season last year, I thought, wow, they got a decent rotation, and they pitched well during spring training, and it just seemed like everything was going well right up until A.J. Pollock fractured his elbow, and then it was like everything went bad for them. Patrick Corbin, I still like Patrick Corbin. I still like Archie Bradley. Robbie Ray is another guy who just can't quite seem to get over that hump, but he's a left-hander that throws in the mid-90s, and it's so tempting when you watch him to think that if he secondary pitches get just a little bit better, he could be dominant. And you never know when it's going to click for a guy. So it's such a hard thing to know. And I guess that's why general managers get paid the big bucks now, but to try to decide on guys like that, because I do think their rotation has a lot of Taijuan Walker. I mean, it does have a lot of potential there. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. I think they gave themselves some depth with the Walker move. And that's always a good thing to have, is to have choices. Patrick Corbin's another guy, by the way, who could slide into the bullpen and be a left-hander that can pitch multiple innings. He pitched really well out of the bullpen for them last year. Obviously, he'd prefer to start, and they'd like to see him be a starter, but he's when you have depth like that, you can move guys around. So I still think their rotation is not as bad as they pitched last year, but until they pitch better, I guess they are as bad as they were last year.
And how about the outfield alignment, the defense? Should be better with a couple of guys returning. Is that something that they need to concentrate on, or are they just more counting on the guys that they thought they were going to be able to count on last year?
Yeah, I think that's definitely an area that has to get better. I think it gets overlooked, and how bad the pitching was, is that a lot of balls dropped in the outfield last year that didn't the year before. They had one of the best defensive outfields in 2015. They had the worst in 2016. I mean, Yasmani Tomas has worked hard at his defense. He's gotten in better shape. He just is not a really good defender in the outfield. And when you put him out there and you're asking people who have never played the outfield before, Brandon Drury never played the outfield in his life, and you're going to stick him out. I think he had two games in spring training or the last week of spring training before the regular season. It's really not a fair position to put a guy into, even though he did he caught the balls he got to. He did a nice, but it wasn't the same as having a true outfielder out there. So I think having Pollock back, having Peralta back certainly helps. If they were able to move Yasmani Tomas and get a guy with a little better defender out there, that would even be better for that outfield. But they had to play so deep. There were so many balls falling in front of them. That was a tough thing last year. I think that it got overlooked, frankly, as far as the pitching staff went, all the balls that fell out there.
The whole Tomas experiment we watched from beginning to now, was there an athleticism, you have to have a special athleticism to be able to make a position change. It's not like just anybody can do that. Did they see that? Because I sort of see him as a guy who is a little bit bigger, maybe not as agile, maybe that would have a harder time with that. What did they see in him that they thought that he could make that change?
You know, I guess they saw the athleticism, and he is a good athlete. He just doesn't have, like, the range, and he just wasn't good at third base. They thought, you know, when they initially signed him, they talked about him being a third baseman. And you watched him in spring training, and you just knew right away that that was just not going to happen. And again, he worked really hard on it. He's a great kid. There's no attitude issues with him, and there's no not working. His body type is what it is. He'd be great as a DH for an American League team. I mean, his hitting really took a step forward last year, power-wise. And so I think he'd just be a better fit there in the American League. He is a good athlete. It just hasn't translated. And they play in some big outfields. You know, the AT&T Park in San Francisco is big. Coors Field is big. Chase Field is big. There's a lot of big parks in the NL West and Petco Park. And so it exposes you if you don't cover a lot of ground, which he just doesn't.
Okay, so let's set the payroll. Let's tell the Diamondbacks what they're going to be spending this offseason. What is it, around $100
million? Around $100 million, which is what they were at last year. So, you know, it's how teams really figure payroll is hard to know with prorated bonuses and 40-man. So, estimated, maybe they have $15 million to spend right now. I don't know that for sure. They've never been afraid of spending in Arizona. It's never been a situation where they've been cheap.
That's true. So
for their market size, they've always, you know, when whoever the GM has been has gone to Ken Kendrick and said, hey, we think this guy puts us over the top. It was Adam LaRoche in 2009 or 10, and they, okay, we'll expand the payroll. It was, you know, whoever has been, Zach Greinke, they've always stretched a little bit. So if the right guy were to come along this year, maybe they do stretch, but I think last year hurt them a little bit revenue-wise in terms of attendance, certainly with the team struggling. Especially playing bad at home, which was kind of inexplicable, just how bad they were at home as opposed to the road. So that's my figure. I'm saying that they're going to spend $100 million this year.
Okay. Well, I'm going to mark it down in red. Thank you very much, Steve.
My pleasure, Allison.
The winter meetings are underway, and every team is here trying to improve their clubs for 2017, including the San Diego Padres. I am Allison Footer, and I'm here with A.J. Cassavell. AJ, let's talk about really where the Padres are now, which is 2 years ago. They were making all of these flashy moves. They were called like the rock stars of the offseason. It didn't quite work out for them. And now here we are, the surprising news that they non-tendered Tyson Ross and are moving from there. So that was a big surprise for you.
Yeah, I think frankly that was shocking to a lot of Padres fans. Tyson Ross was the Padres' best pitcher for 3 years in a row, got hurt on opening day last season. And I think a lot of people kind of assume that if he comes back healthy, he could be the same pitcher. I don't know if that's the case, but I think a lot of people thought, hey, maybe why not at least take a chance on that? Worst case scenario, you can flip him for something at the deadline, but he was going to command maybe $10 million or so in arbitration, given what he's done in the past. And the Padres are open to bringing him back potentially, but now they have to compete with 29 other teams who undoubtedly are interested. I think I got on Twitter, I got fans from at least one fan from any other team asking me how available or what their chances were. So he will be one of the more sought after, maybe the most sought after non-tender going into the season. I think the timeline wasn't necessarily opening day. That would have been a rush, but mid to late April. And if you can get 5.5 months of 2014 Tyson Ross, that's a pretty darn good pitcher.
When you talk about them now having to compete with the 29 other teams, they're also the team that decided not to tender him a contract. So it's, I would assume that he's not looking to really do any favors for the Padres.
Yeah. Well, and it's a business, so they non-tender him. Well, now he doesn't owe the Padres anything. So, I think it might be a little bit of a long shot to think that the Padres have a chance to get back together with Tyson Ross. But you don't non-tender a guy if you're not ready to kind of move forward and look to revamp the rotation in other ways.
Talk about the revamping the rotation. So, where are they as far as filling all of the rotation spots? How is that shaking out?
Well. Before they non-tendered Tyson Ross, they had at least two vacancies in the rotation. Now I would say they have three. I don't think there's a single starting pitcher on the Padres who you can definitively say will be on the Padres for the entirety of the 2017 season. Luis Perdomo right now is probably their projected opening day start. I don't know if they want to heap that burden on a 23-year-old, but I think he would be their number one starter, and he's a guy who, he's young. I'm sure they want to limit his innings and maybe earn some more team control with him. So Christian Friedrich's the other guy. I would say Perdomo and Friedrich are maybe the two starters that probably have spots in the rotation. And after that, they need three starting pitchers. And they have some options. Jared Cosart's coming off surgery. Cesar Vargas, he's coming off a shaky elbow, but he's healthy now. He's pitching in Mexico. Paul Clemens. But they need depth. They need at least three more guys who can pitch in the major leagues. And they need to sign. Last year they did it with Christian Friedrich and with Clayton Richard. Just sign a guy who's like a fringe minor league, major league, let it play out and see what he does. And both of them ended up helping the team out. So I think Preller said they want to cast a wide net. I wouldn't be surprised if they went out and acquired four or five starting pitchers just to go into camp with options, because right now they don't have them.
When you look at the list of the starting pitchers that are available via free agency, and of course we hear it's really a very, I don't want to say weak class, but a tame class. So it's a thin class. So you think that they could possibly look at what might be available in the second and third tier and maybe just sign some guys for like fourth, fifth starter option.
Yes, and that's what the Padres have been saying all along. They're not going to make any big splash in the starting pitching market because, frankly, I don't think there is a big splash to be made. But I think if they want to sign that kind of second, third tier, they're definitely interested in bringing Clayton Richard back. They'll go after those kind of guys and just bring in some volume. Another interesting point, which I didn't necessarily expect, at the general manager meetings, Asia Preller confirmed that they're going to look at Walker Lockett, Dinelson Lamet, a couple prospects as rotation candidates. I don't see them making the rotation, but they could be guys to keep an eye on for maybe down the road in 2017.
So the a bright spot, really, with the Padres is they have a lot of young hitters, a lot of players that they've acquired, not only through their own drafts, players that they've acquired for veteran guys that they have traded away. And they have a nice core. I know Padres fans are getting excited to see what some of these guys can do. Who are you looking to for 2017 who really would be somebody who could have like a breakout rookie season?
Well, Hunter Renfroe, I think is he you can't win a job in 10 days after he got called up, but he certainly did his best. The one game he had two home runs, seven RBIs, and then the next day he put one over the Western Metal Building, which might have been the coolest moment, aside from the All-Star game at Petco Park all season. So he's a guy with a ton of power. He's going to be fun to watch. Andy Green likes to talk about he needs to stay within the strike zone. Essentially, he needs to cut down on his strikeouts and maybe work a few more walks. I don't know if he needs to work walks. I think his power will scare enough pitchers off where if he stays in the strike zone, then he'll walk enough. But that's right now the Padres' concern is – Will he force teams to pitch him in the strike zone? And if he does, he just has an unbelievable amount of power. He will be a fun player to watch. Another one is Manny Margot, center field prospect. I don't know that he's only 22. I don't know that he makes the roster right away, but he covers an unbelievable amount of ground. If the outfield ends up being Hunter Renfroe, Manny Margot, and Travis Jankowski, that could be one of the best defensive outfields in baseball. And personally, I like watching good outfield defense. So there are some fun things to look forward to on offense with these younger players they have.
And how does the bullpen How does the bullpen look, just in general?
The bullpen's kind of a question mark. They have, I think they like the back end of their bullpen. The thing we don't know yet is whether Carter Capps will be healthy on opening day, and if he will be back to 2015 Carter Capps, because 2015 Carter Capps was a fun pitcher to watch. He's got that quirky wind up, and he strikes hitters out left and right. So if he's healthy, they really like what they have in Brad Hand. Brad Hand, to me, is there's no necessarily talk of a trade right now, but he is a potential trade candidate, because teams, after the postseason we just witnessed, teams are looking for multi-inning relievers who perform in high leverage situations and who strike guys out. And he did all three of those things last year. So they have him, Ryan Buchter, Brandon Maurer. Now, that's four spots in the bullpen. After that, I don't know that they have. They need to maybe at least bring guys in who can compete for those final couple spots. So I think they like the back end of their bullpen. They would like to add some depth. Last year they brought in Fernando Rodney, ended up flipping him for Chris Paddock, who's now one of their big prospects. If they could do something like that, maybe bring in a veteran reliever who, if they have to at the deadline, they can trade. Expect the Padres to look to do that kind of thing.
Do you feel like they're on a good path? Like, can you see a couple of years down the road things starting to come together for them? I guess with the pitching, there's really no way to really determine if they're going to have like a core starting pitchers that are going to be ready to compete in a couple of years.
Yeah, they have a lot of good young pitching prospects, but they're all in like the lower levels of the minor league system. So this kind of process that they're going through right now, the hitting was always farther along than the pitching. So this year, 2017, I think what you're going to see is the hitters, the Renfro, the Margot's, the Austin Hedges, those kind of guys breaking through. And then maybe 2018, 2019, you get deeper into the system, the Maury Hones, the Anderson Espinosas, Cal Quantrill. They have these pitching prospects, and they have a high volume of them. They just keep restocking their system. They got one for B.J. Upton. They just got one for Derek Norris. And so they might be 15, 16 prospects in the system, but if you get enough of those guys, some of them will pan out. So the pitching, this is not necessarily going to be the year for the Padres pitching staff the pitching staff of the future. It might be the offense of the future. Pitching-wise, it won't be. But within the system, there are things to look forward to.
Okay. Thank you very much, AJ.
Thanks for having me.
We are here outside of Washington, D.C. at the annual baseball winter meetings, and let's talk a little bit about the San Francisco Giants, who are always an interesting team. I'm Allison Footer. I'm here with Chris Haft. Chris, first let's start off with the growing news, I guess the evolving news we could call it, that it looks like the Giants might be closing in on Mark Melanson, so to speak. They need a closer. This seems to be a good fit. It's not official, but it seems to be going that way. And that would be a big get for them.
Huge one, Allison. Maybe one of the bigger acquisitions they've made at the winter meetings in recent years. They certainly needed a closer. That was just really accentuated with an exclamation point or two in their very last game of the season, that is the postseason, when they blew a 5-2 lead in the ninth inning. And if they were all set to bring the division series back to Chicago, might have been a little more difficult for those Cubs to win the World Series. But that drove home the point that they needed a closer to anchor the bullpen, because the other relievers just had no roles, without a closer there to solidify things. Melanson, obviously, with his success over the last two or three years, has proven he can be the guy for them maybe in 2017.
Yeah, when you look at the bullpen, and there's a part where you have to get through a six-month season, of course, and then there is also the postseason. As deflating as it was, how that game ended, it didn't seem to be all that shocking. It didn't seem to be shocking to Bruce Bochy. I mean, it was sort of one of those things that everyone was thinking this could happen, and the likelihood of it happening was pretty great. Because I remember we were talking during spring training, and we were actually talking to Dwayne Kuiper, and he said, no matter what happens, they're not going to let the bullpen derail this season. And that was such a sticking point with them and an issue. And so it's one of those things where they go into this offseason, they cannot avoid it. They have to address it. This team is too good to let games go by the wayside because of a bullpen.
Yeah, there's a lot of things there, Allison, that you kind of pointed to. You know, baseball, I think, always, or usually, almost all the time, you know, the truth will out, so to speak. And this was the truth about the Giants, that they lacked a closer. And so they couldn't wallpaper over that, finally, in the end. You know, they're a team that has a talented starting rotation, and why waste that rotation, you know, by not having a good closer? So they're with one move, they're able to correct a lot of ills.
So speaking of that rotation, and we've been having our regular podcast for quite a long time now, and I always talk about how much I really like the starting rotation, and I like it again going into spring training next year. I mean, it's still very early. Obviously, this is the first day of the winter meetings, and there's still an entire offseason to finish, but if they went into next year with this rotation, they'd be in pretty good shape. How do you see it?
Well, you know, you've got so many teams out there scrambling for starting pitching because they made the move for Matt Moore at midseason this past season, which was painful because they had to give up third baseman Matt Duffy. But now they're not in a position to have to search for starting pitching. They've got their strong 1-4 with Bumgarner, Cueto, and Moore, and oh my God,
Samardzija.
And they have Jeff Samardzija. How can I forget? He'll bowl me over if I did forget. But and they should have a pretty spirited competition for the fifth starter spot. Matt Cain, Ty Block, Chris Stratton, maybe a few others. So whoever wins that number five spot is going to deserve it. And, yeah, they should go into the season with one of the better rotations in the league, if not the best.
And the other need that the Giants are looking to address is possibly a power-hitting outfielder, because they just grow on trees. You can find those guys anywhere. But that would be an acquisition that they'd like to make. They could use, I guess, if there's a weakness, they could use a little help in that area.
General Manager Bobby Evans, I don't know if it's a smokescreen or not, he keeps on saying that he's happy to go into the regular season with Jarrett Parker and or Mack Williamson as the left fielder. And that may be so, but I think in the situation there, the point they're at in their development right now, they're well-developed, they're established as contenders. I think a proven hitting outfielder would further their chances of making it into the postseason and progressing into the postseason. They've got a window of opportunity with that rotation, with Buster Posey behind the plate and Brandon Crawford at shortstop, two premier players. An excellent starting rotation. If they get Melanson, then they'll have a premier closer, and that'll give them a chance to, again, go far in the postseason. If one of those pieces is missing, maybe they're not such a contender.
So we heard so much last year because it was an even year. I mean, I got tired of hearing this, and I don't even cover the Giants. So, of course the Giants are going to win the World Series, because they always win the World Series in even numbered years. And now that they didn't, I mean, of course every Giants fan wants them to win the World Series every year. But just from a reporter standpoint, it has to be kind of nice that you don't have to really hear that, discuss that, or talk about that being a thing. So it's nothing more than a coincidence that they ended up winning the World Series.
It really was a coincidence. It was a happy coincidence for them, but quite a coincidence. Some people thought they shouldn't have won it in 2014, but Madison Bumgarner kind of took care of that. So,
what can you do? Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
Colorado Rockies took a big step in improving their team by signing Ian Desmond to a very long-term contract. Let's talk about that. Thomas Harding, I'm Allison Footer. Thomas, the Rockies are a team that, as you know, I think has great potential to do some good things in the next couple of years. Signing Ian Desmond, this is a big-time commitment for them. What was your reaction when you heard about this?
Well, I was surprised because they looked at every first baseman on the market. Then they signed a guy who's never played first base. And as far as we know right now, he's going to play first base for them. I will say that defensively, I like this move because Ian Desmond came up a shortstop and has played center field, positions where you have to have movement and read balls and things like that. And I think that's the person you move to first base. A lot of times you'll see a guy late in his career that doesn't move as well, or maybe a catcher. They put those guys at first. And to me, those moves never really work out. Now, offensively, he's done quite well at Coors Field in his career. However, second half of last year, he really struggled offensively, has a tendency to hit balls on the ground. You want to hit him in the air at Coors. But who knows? I mean, I look at some of the numbers that he's had in his career, and if he is able to really make good contact, good solid contact, Coors Field could be good to him, and it could help the Rockies.
When you say this has to happen, and if this happens, then this could be a good thing, and oh, he needs to hit the ball in the air, he hits the ball on the ground. 5 years. Five years. This isn't like, well, we'll see if this works out. 5 years. That's a. It's they're with him. They're stuck with him.
They're with him. It's one of those things that's a bold move that the Rockies have never been accused of making in their time. You know, they tend to make to make very small moves. The fact that they've made this financial commitment to a guy they believe is a winner. And here are a couple of really weird little things about this signing. He could play some left field if they need him in left sometimes. But when I look at the recent history of the Rockies, they've had injuries at shortstop. You know, Troy Tulowitzki had one or two almost every season that he was there. And last year they lost Trevor Story for a period of time. And production really drops at that position. If Trevor Story comes back and say he gets hurt, they have a shortstop standing over there at first base, so that makes some sense here. But it seems like when this move happened, people talked about, is he really going to play first, or is there a domino effect with other moves?
So the starting pitching is the one thing that makes us feel very good about the Rockies' chances to emerge in the next couple of years and be competitive. So now everything might – they're trying to make everything come together. So this could be a pretty cohesive unit.
It could be a pretty cohesive unit because the starting pitching, while young, really was productive last season. Those guys are talented. If the lineup comes together as they think it will, then they're going to score some runs. Listen, even if Ian Desmond doesn't have a great year, they're still going to score runs because of where they play and who they have in that lineup. And right now, as we sit here at this very moment in history, they've still got to improve that bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now they're still playing in the NL West, as we know. It is very hard to compete in this division with the Dodgers and the Giants. Does this change the look of things? I know that they're not ready to take over and realistically win the division in 2017. Does this change the tenor of things a little bit in that division?
Well, I'll have to say that they really believe that they are ready to take over and win the division in 2017, and they believe this Ian Desmond move will help get them closer. Whether it will or not, that's what a lot of people are questioning at this point because of some struggles he's had offensively. But they believe that they're able to compete. And listen, all you have to do is get into the playoffs. The Rockies, they went to the World Series in 2007. They've been to the playoffs three times in their history. They've never won this division. They'd like to win the division, but they feel like they're a playoff contender. They felt it even before this move, and they believe they'll make another move with the relief pitching. And maybe they are a contender. They're going to go into it believing they are one under new manager Bud Black.
Well, you say that the bullpen is sort of an area that they want to address, so how do you see that shaking out right now?
Well, there are still some relievers on the market. We've talked about Mike Dunn from the Miami Marlins, but one guy that I'm intrigued by that's on the market is Brad Ziegler. He has one of the highest ground ball rates in the majors. I think it's something like three of the top ground ball seasons since 2008 in the major leagues. I'd like to see them give a shot at him, even though he doesn't strike out a large number of people. When he went to the Red Sox, changed a bit. His strikeout percentage went up, and he used his curveball more. Darren Holmes, the bullpen coach, he had a career of using a curveball at Coors Field. So he's a guy that I would like to see if they can land a deal with out there.
Thank you very much, Thomas.
Thank you very much.
We are here at the winter meetings, and the Los Angeles Dodgers, as always, I'm sure will be a very interesting team to watch. I'm Allison Footer. I'm here with Ken Gernick, who, of course, covers the Dodgers and will be diligently doing so all week long. Ken, let's look at where the Dodgers are right now. Really, the starting pitching, I think, is a little bit of the focus of what might be a strength for them at this point. The way the season ended last year, things kind of shook out well given everything that they had to go through throughout the season. It looked pretty good at the end of the season.
Right, and I think the trade for Rich Hill, even though he started out on the disabled list, you know, he came on strong and was dominant at times, you know, when he was healthy. He's got that blister problem that popped up, but it looks like they're going to re-sign him, bring him back to be the number two behind Kershaw, and they will have depth from which to deal if they choose.
When you look at Urias, and we talked about him last year as a guy that, I mean, he's kind of an untouchable as far as they're not going to trade him. He is the young up-and-coming star. He's young. But they needed to really limit his innings. And can we start maybe talking about him just being a guy in the rotation that could put forth a full season?
I think they said they're still going to be careful. He's still young. And, even though he built up more innings, I don't think they want to jump him up to like 200. So, again, they have depth, and they've got a lot of young pitchers, and I think we will see the shuttle from AAA again as we did last year. Last year was more because of injuries. They hope that that's behind them, but I could see where they will, you know, back off on a guy like Urias because of his age.
So we talked. Rich Hill seems to be headed back to the Dodgers, possibly like a 3-year deal. We're hearing things. Nothing has been confirmed, of course. And like you said, I mean, the blister issue, I guess, is always going to be something that people talk about until he goes maybe a full season without having the issue. Certainly the postseason last year, just a really solid, solid guy, left-hander. That can really help. That takes a lot of the burden off of everything else that they have to do to create this roster this offseason.
Sure, if they can keep him out there, you know, and that's the key. And it's really been the key through his whole career. It's not just the blisters. He's had quite a roller coaster career. But he seems to have clicked, you know, as far as understanding how to pitch and get the most out of what he has. And, you know, he doesn't throw particularly hard enough, but he relies on that curveball. It kind of pitches backwards, and it's a devastating pitch. And it's the type of pitch that not too many guys throw, so the hitters don't see it all that much. And it was really effective last year to the point that, you know, he almost had a perfect game. So, you know, and then he pushes down the whole rotation. If he's second, then you've got Maeda, and then you've got Urias, and you've really got about 6 or 7 guys to pick from for your fifth if you choose to go that way.
So they could make a trade to fortify another area, but there's also a big position that they need to figure out what they're going to do, and that's with the closing situation. So there's 3 big closers out there: Kenley Jansen, Aroldis Chapman, Mark Melancon. We keep hearing those names sort of all put together at the same time. Dodgers actually employed one of them last year, so they have to decide. You hear things like that they don't really want to spend big in that area. How can they avoid doing that, though?
Yeah, that's the dilemma that they're really in here, and that's kind of the biggest hurdle they have to clear, is what do they do there? You know, they also want to re-sign Justin Turner, you know, and he's really the only power bat at third base on the market, so they don't have as many options there to replace him, where they would if Jansen were to leave, go to Miami or wherever he would go. They still have 2 closers left, and they may not even get a closer. You know, they may wind up just trying to acquire a bunch of 7th and 8th inning guys and mix and match. That sort of fits their approach anyway. You know, they like to do that. They like to mix and match in a lot of different ways. So, while it might surprise a lot of people and disappoint some fans, I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't get a closer, but they're certainly trying to.
So what do you think that their prospects are to re-sign Justin Turner, as you talked about it?
He's a real good fit. You know, he's a local guy. He's played so well. He's awesome in the clubhouse. I would have to bet that they would, you know. I think that he does want to stay. So I'm guessing that he'll be the one that they do keep. I'd be surprised if they're able to keep him and Jansen. Because they're both going to be looking at, you know, 4 or 5 year contracts, and I don't think that's what this team wants to do. They've stated they want to be sustainable, be able to develop through their own system, and not have to go out every year and sign multiple free agents for, you know, $100 million. And that's that was the formula that Stan Kasten used in Atlanta, and they were competitive every year. And they're doing it again here in L.A., and even though when they came in, they made a splash and spent a lot of money, I think they're going to pull back, not because they have to, but because they want to, and it's just the smart way to run their business.
They are. When you talk about the big money teams, like the Yankees for years, Brian Cashman used to bristle a little bit by people not acknowledging that they always had a very strong farm system. And the Dodgers have developed some star players through their system, and that has to be encouraging when you look at what Corey Seager has been able to do. They do have a young crop that's coming up. And you have to – it doesn't matter what team you are and how much money you have to spend. You have to have that foundation, that core to build around. And I would imagine that the Dodgers are pretty happy with what they have.
Right. And this new ownership group came in 5 years ago, and they didn't have a good farm system. It was kind of shredded. They didn't scout aggressively internationally. And that was one of the things that the new ownership group did. they turned back on the spigot to not only the Caribbean but internationally, Japan. You know, they brought over Maeda. They've done a lot to try and bolster their talent pool, and it was something that was needed. And so they now feel that they're in position to have this flow of players coming through. Now, they're not all going to be Corey Seager. They're not going to win Rookie of the Year every year like they did, you know, back in the 90s. But they're hoping that maybe a Cody Bellinger later on at the end of this year or maybe next year can become the next Corey Seager. They've got Jose De Leon, you know, right-handed pitcher that they hope can, if he isn't as good as Urias, maybe he's going to be close. And so they do have probably more prospects in these next 2 years than they've had probably in at least 10 years.
So let's talk about Yasiel Puig, because why not? I haven't talked to you about Yasiel Puig in, what's it been, like 5 weeks? So is he trade bait? What, I guess that is the guy that they can dangle out there. Clearly his stock has fallen a little bit, but he did redeem himself a little bit at the end of the season.
Right, all true. They do have depth in the outfield. And even though Puig did come back on when they brought him back in September, they really only used him as in a platoon. You know, my guess is he might be more valuable to another team that could use him every day than the Dodgers in a platoon. So I think because they have the depth, that does make him expendable to a certain extent. And I think that he might have the most trade value to another team that thinks they can recapture the way he was when he first came up. So I would say that this probably would be the time that the Dodgers are best positioned to move Puig. And if they find, you know, the right fit, I don't think they would hesitate the way they seem to have hesitated in past years.
I think it would be more on the team that might be interested in him, because there's a risk. He seems to have progressed a little bit in maturity, and maybe he was knocked down a few pegs because of the things that did come out about some of his behavior and some of the things that he was doing that made him sort of not a team player. And I guess it would be more on this side of the team that might be interested, taking the risk that he's going to revert back to his old ways now that he's sort of starting fresh.
Well, sure, but you don't get an all-star, you know, every day. You know, that type of player with the tools that he has, they're not always available. So, sure, you would have to take a risk, and it would be factored into what you had to give up to get him and whether the Dodgers felt that that was worthwhile. But if he's only going to be a platoon player for the Dodgers, I think it's just logical to think they'd be more likely to trade him than 2-3 years ago when they expected him to play every day.
So let's talk about the payroll. Do you see it maybe increasing, decreasing, staying the same? The Dodgers are always sort of very non-committal about what they're going to spend. Is that still the case?
And because they do tend to make acquisitions during the year. You know, this past year they got Reddick and Hill. And so they'll take on contracts. I'm sure that they'll be at or right near the top of baseball, but it won't be $300 million. It'll probably be $250 or maybe less. And that's the trend. They want to go backwards. You know, they want to make it affordable and sustainable and younger. They want to get younger. And they did that in a big way with Corey Seager last year and some of their pitchers. And even if they bring Rich Hill back, that's not exactly getting younger. But they're getting younger in the bench. Austin Barnes is taking over as the backup catcher instead of Ruiz and A.J. Ellis. So I think that they're – and when you get younger, you get – cheaper. So you know, I would say it will be $250 or a little short of that probably, which is still a ton of money, you know, by comparison to anybody else. But I think it's an improvement to the Dodgers as far as the trend going in the right direction.
They're exercising some restraint with only a $250 million payroll. Good for them. Okay, Ken, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Allison.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.